And now, Westwood One presents the Lost Lennon Tapes. Brought to you by Budweiser, the king of beers. For all you do, this Bud's for you. And by Nestle's Alpine White. Sweet dreams you can't resist. Here's our host, Elliot Mintz.
Right now, we're hearing a rehearsal of Whatever Gets You Through the Night by John Lennon and the Plastic Ono Nuclear Band. It was taped in July 1974 during sessions for John's Walls and Bridges album, recorded in August at the record plant in New York. May Pang, production coordinator for the LP, was with Lennon when he got the inspiration for the tune, which would soon become his first number one solo single.
Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right.
Now, the song came up one night, and he was watching, I think it was Reverend Ike or something, I'm not even sure, and he just heard him say something. And he goes, "Doesn't matter, whatever gets you through the night is it." Or, and he went, "What a great line." He took that line, and he just started to write lyrics for it.
Now, Elton John is already a superstar when he and Lennon meet through a mutual friend. And by late August 1974, John and Elton have made several appearances on each other's records. As Dr. Winston Oboogie, his favorite nickname during this, the latter stage of his infamous Lost Weekend, Lennon sings backing vocals on Elton's version of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. It goes on to hit number one in early 1975. And on the single's B-side is Elton's cover of One Day at a Time, a Lennon original from the Mind Games LP. But as they recall in separate interviews, John and Elton's most momentous collaborations are the released version of the song and the live performance, which follows on November 28th, Thanksgiving night, 1974.
Whatever gets you through the night.
How that record came about was that Elton was in town and I was doing it and needed the harmony. He did the harmony on that and a couple more and played beautiful piano on it. And jokingly, he was telling me he was going to do this Madison Square Garden concert.
When I did that, I just jokingly said, "Oh, if it gets to number one, the single, you have to come on stage with us." I mean, he was never like, say, I'm only going to do this unless you come on stage with us. And it did get to number one. And so he said, "All right, I'll come on stage," much to our surprise.
I did not expect it to get to number one at all. I didn't think it had a chance in hell. I wasn't being very well received on any level then, you know, with the Coltexes and the hamburgers or whatever. And so I said, sure I will. Well, I lived to get nervous about that, because a year later, whenever it was, he came back and says, "Okay, it's time to pay your dues."
And the record went to number one.
Yeah, that was great. It was the first number one I had, actually. Imagine that wasn't number one. Instant Karma wasn't number one. So I don't think a better record than Whatever Gets You Through the Night.
Seeing as Thanksgiving, and Thanksgivings are joyous occasions, we thought we'd make tonight a little bit of a joyous occasion by inviting someone up with us onto stage. And I'm sure he would be no stranger to anybody in the audience, but I say it's our great privilege and your great privilege to see and hear Mr. John Lennon.
Whatever Gets You Through the Night, John Lennon, sitting in with Elton John's band in front of 20,000 delirious fans at Madison Square Garden, Thanksgiving night, 1974.
Which is a night I'll never forget, because he'd never been seen on stage in New York for a long, long time, and the crowd just went banana. Grown road managers were standing there crying their eyes out. Well, we all did, actually. It was great.
I was quite astonished that the crowd was so nice to me, because I was only judging by what papers said about me, and I thought I may as well not be around. And the crowd was fantastic.
And then he came and played on Lucy in the Sky with Diamond.
We're going to do a number now which is written by a certain gentleman on the stage, Mr. Paul McCartney, and it happens to be our new single. And if you don't sing on this one, I want to hear you raise that roof up to the ceiling. Come on. This one's one of the best songs ever written. Here we go. In a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Cellophane flowers of yellow. Rocking horse people eating marshmallow pie. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. You spit the taxi, appear on the shore, waiting to take you away. Climb in the back with your head in the clouds and you're gone.
Elton John and John Lennon live, updating the Sgt. Pepper classic Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Now, Lennon's making his first onstage appearance in years isn't the only historic aspect of the Madison Square Garden show with Elton. We'll hear the rest of the story later in the show.
Coming up on the Lost Lennon tapes, John, Yoko, and the Smothers Brothers recall the infamous bed-ins of 1969.
We're doing it in our own way, which we think is the best for us.
Stay in bed.
We're back with the Lost Lennon tapes.
Don't let me down.
The first half of 1969 is a roller coaster for John Lennon and Yoko Ono. It starts out with the troubled Get Back, Let It Be sessions in London. On January 20th, as the war in Vietnam rages on, they're horrified to witness Richard Nixon's inauguration as President of the United States. And in early February, there's the heated battle over Alan Klein's appointment as the Beatles' business manager. Then on March 20th, after a short vacation in Paris, John and Yoko secretly marry in Gibraltar. After the ceremony, Yoko says the couple's going to stage many happenings, and their marriage is one of them. Now, John and Yoko's honeymoon in Amsterdam is anything but secret. On March 22nd, they check into the presidential suite at the Amsterdam Hilton to begin the first of their famous bed-ins for peace. For the Lennons, whose every move is scrutinized by the international media, the bed-in is the best way to protest the war in Vietnam. During their week in bed, the new Mr. and Mrs. Lennon invite members of the media to join them in their hotel room. The couple devotes 10 to 12 hours a day to talking about peace with everyone willing to listen, and with some who aren't. John and Yoko recall the scene for the BBC's Andy Peebles.
One of the most hysterical moments of the first day when we were sitting in the Amsterdam Hilton in the bed like two little kids, you know, with all the posters on the wall.
Flower children.
Flower kids or whatever. These guys were sweating to fight to get in first because they thought we were going to be making love in bed, you see. That's where their minds were at. Because we'd be naked, okay, bed, right. John and Yoko, sex.
Among the skeptical visitors John and Yoko talk with is London-based reporter and celebrity watcher Donald Zeck of the Daily Mirror.
Nobody's ever given peace a complete chance. Gandhi tried it, Martin Luther King tried it, but they were shot. But nobody's given...
You can't get peace in a king-size divan on floor 802.
We don't expect to, but I mean, we're talking mainly to the revolutionaries who think they can get it overnight by breaking down the buildings, you know. They can't get it.
Yeah, but I mean...
We thought about this for months. This is the best possible, most functional and effective way of promoting and protesting against violence that our minds combined could think of.
But to go around in this utterly bizarre, as I said, like two chromium-plated nuts, you know, looking like they've just been let out and have to be back by 9 o'clock behind bars. I can't sit here without laughing.
Well,
I have to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, just to do that is enough, as I said, you know. Just we're having a laugh.
I have a feeling if you came down to room 801 and you and I was on the bed and you were watching me, there wouldn't be much to laugh at.
Well, it depends, you know, if you'd announced it to the world. I mean, if you did it, if you, Donald Zeck, did 7 days in bed to see what it was like. So think it over, Don. Because, I mean, for Donald Zeck to do it, the great English cynic, would be fantastic. It would be set up such a peace reaction. It would be such a blowout for your fellow journalists, they wouldn't believe it.
Oh, that'd be great. Please help us, you can do it, you know.
Please stop this nonsense. Go home. We don't like people like you. Go to a doctor to be normal. Are you getting this?
It's great.
Hey, man. Go to a doctor to be normal. Well, we're seeing a psychiatrist today, so maybe he'll fix us up. Bloody marvellous. See, we're not getting through on some levels, as you noticed. Thank you.
Goodbye, Amsterdam. Goodbye.
After winding up their 7-day Amsterdam bed-in, John and Yoko fly to Vienna on March 31st, where they stage another event. It's a press conference promoting peace and the premiere of their new film, Rape. But instead of facing the media, the couple talks with reporters from inside of a large bag.
Could you come out?
No.
Why not?
Because this is a bag event. Total communication.
How long is your hair, man?
You have to guess. It's not important. It's only what I say that we're here for.
Well, how could you prove that you are John Lennon?
I don't have to. I'm here just to talk about peace. It doesn't matter who I am.
Do you wear some clothes?
Of course, yes.
You wear your white clothes?
Oh, that's a secret, you know. I mean, we're wearing a white bag at the moment.
Pretty warm in there, isn't it, John?
It's getting hot, yes. You wouldn't know whether it was black, white, woman or man or anything. You wouldn't be sure. So you'd have total communication, which is what we had lying in bed in the dark. We couldn't see each other. and we weren't looking at each other. But the idea came just bang, and we both thought of it at the same time. You know, total communication, bag. And then, of course, we came up with the word bagism to put a tag on it, you know, to put it in a bag. Because we were always explaining ourselves, I'd say, what's the difference between when we met and before we met? That I was in a pop bag and tending to go round in circles, and she was in an avant-garde bag, you know, just like that. And intellectually, all the artists, all the pop musicians, everybody's saying, there's no barriers, there's no barriers. And though we all are going round and round in these circles, saying, no barriers, we're not in a bag, man, we're not in a bag. But of course, everybody's in a bag. So we got out of those bags into a bigger bag. And so that's what bagism is, you know. And it's total communication. I mean, it's communication way up there, you know. It's after you leave the body. It's soul communication entirely, you know.
Standing in the dockets of Hampton, trying to get to Holland or France.
What we're really doing is sending out a message to the world, but mainly to the youth, especially the youth or anybody really that's interested in protesting for peace or protesting against any forms of violence. And we say everybody's getting a bit heavy or a bit intellectual about it, everybody's talking about peace, but nobody's doing anything about it except for a few people. And the things like the Grosvenor Square marches in London, the end product of it was just newspaper stories about riots and fighting. And we did the bed event in Amsterdam and the bag piece in Vienna, just to give people an idea that there's many ways of protest, and this is one of them, and anybody could grow their hair for peace, or give up a week of their holiday for peace, or sit in a bag for peace. Protest against peace anyway, but peacefully, because we think that peace is only got by peaceful methods, and that to fight the establishment with their own weapons is no good, because they always win, and they've been winning for thousands of years. They know how to play the game, violence, and it's easier for them when they can recognize you and shoot you. But they don't know how to handle humor, and peaceful humor, and that's our message, really.
Good morning. As I was saying about bagging, you see, you get in this bag and you jump out the window. Next thing you know, you got a policeman on your head.
Made a lightning trip to Vienna, eating chocolate cake in a bag. His baby said, she's gone to his head. They look just like two gurus in drag. Like, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, they're gonna crucify me. Caught the early train back to London, 50 acres tied in a sack. The men from the press said, we wish you success. It's good to have the both of you back. Right, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, they're gonna crucify me. The way things are going, they're gonna crucify me.
The next event John and Yoko plan is another bed-in, this time in New York. But on May 16th, American immigration authorities deny Lennon a visa to enter the United States. They cite his conviction on marijuana possession charges in London the previous November. But at the time, John thinks the authorities took exception to the bed-in's political message.
We tried to do it in New York, but the American government wouldn't let us in. They knew we'd done it in Amsterdam. They didn't want any peaceniks here, which is what we heard the department of whoever controls that said. But we ended up doing it in Montreal instead and broadcasting across the border.
So, 2 days after arriving in Toronto, May 24th, John, Yoko, press agent Derek Taylor, and a film crew check into Suite 1742 at the Queen Elizabeth Hotel in Montreal. While the Amsterdam Hilton event had lasted a week, the Lennon's play host to the media for 10 tumultuous days in Montreal.
But after answering all these questions many times, it got down to all we were saying was give peace a chance.
On June 1st, the seventh day of the bed-in, John and Yoko invite a bunch of friends up for an impromptu recording session. The Lennons have a portable 8-track tape machine delivered to their room.
Up to the room, yeah, and there was like Tommy Smothers and Tim Leary and Dick Gregg and all people sort of clapping along and singing on the chorus.
With a little help from his brother Dick, Tommy Smothers recalls the scene.
There was everyone that was involved in the peace movement and were kind of the groupies of the Beatles. We all were, you know, and we still are. And that was exciting. I recorded the song Give Peace a Chance, and Lennon gave me a guitar, and they were sitting in the bed, and I got on the bed and started playing it, and Give Peace a Chance, real simple chords, and I always said, well, I think I'll fill in to myself, so I filled in some inversions, some different chord inversions, and I was doing some passing chords, doing some slick stuff, and he stops in the middle, he says, Tom, play exactly like I do. I want you to play exactly like I do. It sounds better that way. And I was really kind of smitten there. Gonna put me down.
John was playing all the open strings the simple way.
Give peace a chance.
live at Montreal's Queen Elizabeth Hotel, give peace a chance.
Coming up, Johnny gets the blues and takes a trip down the Rock Island line with John Henry. All aboard. Let's get back to the Lost Lennon tapes and our host, Elliot Mintz.
Well, it's Saturday night and I just got paid. Come up by morning, don't try to save. My heart says go, go, have a time. Cause it's Saturday night and baby, I'm feeling fine. Don't rip it up. Don't rock it up. Don't shake it up. Don't ball it up. Gonna rock it up and ball tonight.
Now, most of us know about John Lennon's deep love of classic American rock and roll. But in mid-50s England, just before Elvis, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Buddy Holly, the big musical trend is called skiffle.
Down the rockin' line, she's a mighty good road. The rockin' line is a road to ride. The rockin' line is a mighty good road. And if you want to ride, you got to fight it like a fight. You get your ticket at the station on the rockin' line. Hallelujah, I'm safe from sin. The good Lord's coming for to see me again. Down the rock island line, she's a mighty good road. The rock island line is a road to ride. Yeah, the rock island line, she's a mighty good road. And if you won't, you ride it, got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station on the rock island line.
Based on American folk and blues and played with acoustic guitars, washboards, and washtub basses, skiffle is so simple that theoretically anyone can play it. The style's popularized by singer-guitarist Lonnie Donegan. His version of Rock Island Line, written by legendary American bluesman Huddy Ledbetter, launches the skiffle craze throughout Great Britain. Now, John Lennon had received his first guitar from his banjo-playing mother, Julia, when he was just 4 years old. But it's Donegan's Rock Island Line that prompts the 16-year-old Lennon to form his first group, the Quarrymen, in May 1957, with friends who also attend the Quarry Bank High School for boys. In going through the hundreds of hours of John's personal tapes in the Dakota archives, we found one cassette that includes this version of Rock Island Line, recorded at home sometime during the 1970s. We'll be right back. From the Lennon Archives, John performing a version of Leadbelly's classic Rock Island Line that's never been heard outside the Dakota. Now, it's through songs like Rock Island Line that John's introduced to unadulterated American folk and blues. On another of John's tapes, we found this version of John Henry.
Will John Henry have a little woman and the dress that she wore was red? Before you try that steel driving man, gonna die with a hammer in your hand. Will he die with a hammer in his hand? Will John Henry
Short but heartfelt, that's John Henry as performed by blues fan John Lennon at home in the Dakota.
Coming up, we'll hear how Lennon's Thanksgiving 1974 onstage appearance with Elton John marked the end of John's lost weekend.
That's when Yoko and I got back together the night I performed with Elton at Madison Square Garden.
Stay with us. Let's get back to the lost Lennon tapes.
From the Lennon Archives, a demo of Surprise, Surprise, Sweet Bird of Paradox, the studio version of which appears on John's Walls and Bridges LP, released in October 1974. Now, by the time of his Madison Square Garden performance with Elton John that Thanksgiving night, Lennon's been separated from Yoko Ono for more than a year, even though the couple's been in almost constant daily contact by phone. At first, while living in Los Angeles, John had hit the bottle pretty hard, and his escapades frequently made the news. But he'd begun to snap out of it during the spring of 1974 as he produced the Pussycat Sessions for old drinking buddy Harry Nilsson. After that, Lennon got busy writing and recording Walls and Bridges, John's first number one solo album, thanks in part to the huge success of Whatever Gets You Through the Night. Now, John's offhanded promise to join Elton on stage if the single got to number one was one thing, but keeping that promise led to probably the most important event in the Ballad of John and Yoko, as they tell Andy Peebles.
That's when Yoko and I got back together, the night I performed with Elton at Madison Square Garden.
No, let me explain and that, you, because I was in the audience, yeah. You know, and Elton came out, and he performed, and this is the first time I saw Elton perform. And he's just a fantastic performer, the performer of the century. That's the way I felt that night. I was watching, and everybody was applauding and all that. But then when John came out, the whole sort of hall was shaking, because everybody was jumping and applauding and screaming and shouting. It's an amazing scene. And really, literally, that floor was shaking. I thought it was like an earthquake. Yeah. So John came out like that, because it was a surprise to everything, I suppose. But anyway, he was standing there. I mean, I'm sure that people thought, well, this is great. But this John that I observed was a different John. I thought, oh, he looks so lonely. He looks so lonely out there. You know?
So that's my
And I was sort
there.
Of yeah. like...
I didn't know she was in the audience.
Choked, you know?
I couldn't have gone on if I'd known she was there. I came off stage, and there she was. We looked at each other, uh-oh. You know, it was mm-hmm. like the Indica Gallery scene mm-hmm. again. And that's when we got to back together that night. So it's a happy memory, that whole
period.
It's
a great story, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd like to thank Elton and the boys for having me on tonight. We tried to think of a number to finish off with so that I could get out of here and be sick. And we thought we'd do a number of an old estranged fiancé of mine called Paul. This is one I never sang. It's an old Beatle number, and we just about know it. Here we are.
She was just 17, and you know what I mean.
We sang Paul's song, I Saw Her Standing There.
Live at Madison Square Garden, November 28, 1974. John Lennon, Elton John, guitarist Davy Johnstone, bass player Dee Murray, percussionist Ray Cooper, drummer Nigel Olsen, and the Muscle Shoals horns. I saw her standing there. It turns out to be John's final appearance on a concert stage.
Coming up, we'll hear an unreleased John Lennon blues jam and a song inspired by playwright Tennessee Williams. Stay. Welcome back to the Lost Lennon Tapes. Here's our host, Elliot Mintz.
We're listening to an unreleased blues instrumental we found on one of John Lennon's work tapes. Now, one of the most fascinating things about listening to tapes like this is being able to hear him develop a song from inception to demo. One case in point is a Lennon original titled Tennessee. Now, it's not the same Tennessee some of you may know from the Let It Be sessions. John was inspired to write this one during the mid-70s after reading works by legendary playwright Tennessee Williams. I clearly recall John playing Tennessee for me during one of my visits to the Dakota back then. He was sitting in the White Room at his famous white grand piano. Right now, let's listen to what the song sounds like on the first complete take John recorded, and then three takes later.
Tennessee, oh Tennessee, what you shown to me. Your words like water, pure and clear. The sadness of your soul reveals the music of the sphere. Concealed behind your spirit mind, your poet's love.
From one of John Lennon's personal tapes, Tennessee, takes 1 and 4, neither of which have ever been heard on the radio until now. As Tennessee evolved, it became another song titled Memories, and we'll hear that on a future broadcast of the Lost Lennon Tapes. Thank you for joining us in our journey through the Dakota Archives. We'll be back next week with more rare and unreleased songs and interviews from John Lennon's collection. I look forward to being with you then. I'm Elliot Mintz.
The Lost Lennon Tapes, brought to you this week by Budweiser, the king of beers. For all you do, this Bud's for you. And by Nestle's Alpine White, sweet dreams you can't resist. The Lost Lennon Tapes, a presentation of the Westwood One Radio Network in cooperation with the John Lennon Estate. Written and produced by Stephen Peebles. Production and engineering by Dave Kephart, with pre-production assistance by Jeff Kowalczyk and Brian Schiff. Research assistance by John Schwartz and Steve Longo. Special thanks this week to the BBC and to Bruce Gary. Our executive producer, Norm Pattis. For Westwood One, I'm Scott Muni. Thanks for listening.